When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to the 1871 podcast, and our special guest for this episode is former Reading midfielder and model, John. So, John, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the 1871 podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. It always seems weird when people call me a model, mate. You know what I mean?
Oh, there you go. We've seen the pictures on Instagram. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah. So, not the pants ones, hopefully.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're living the dream. You know, professional footballer, playing in the Premier League, won the title with Brentford as well, didn't you? And then, you know, set up your own fashion business, done some modelling. And we'll come on to your time at Reading, but I mentioned a few of us have seen some of the pictures on Instagram. So my first question is about that. Which was more difficult? Which was more difficult? Training for Reading or maintaining the six pack?
The amount of running you do when you're a footballer, you can eat what you want. So unless I'm putting the sort of miles in on the treadmills in the gym now, I've kind of got to watch what I'm eating. You know what I mean? Footballers are lucky. We can eat pasta all Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We can eat Burger King. Whatever you want to do, you can eat it because you're doing them, the Ks or whatever, or the miles on the pitch. So it was a lot easier then to keep the six pack. And you know, I had mates like Stacky and that in the gym. So that was fun. but now I'm a bit older as well. So it's a little bit more difficult. I've got to look after myself a little bit more. I've got to get in the gym. I've got to watch what I eat. But the drinking's all still there, so.
Oh, fair enough. Look, just to put it out there, if you're if the modelling agency that you work with needs a balding middle-aged man with a dad bod, I'm available. £10 an hour, I'll do it. No worries.
Listen, a lot of us backup.
Everyone's included now. Do you know what I mean? It's all inclusive. I'm losing a lot of clients to people like you now. You know?
All shapes and sizes, isn't it? So yeah. Yeah, 6'7". Does that help?
Yeah, you ain't 6'7", are you?
I am. Yeah. You can get loads of jobs. No one realizes because I'm sitting down. So
there's a big and tall shop on Oxford Street. They love you.
Yeah, I know.
There you go.
Shame I couldn't head the ball, or it would have been brilliant. But never mind.
I couldn't head the ball either, mate. I was trying to use my chest. You know what I mean?
So, John, you know, we know a lot about the football side of things with Reading, and obviously we're going to talk about Arsenal and stuff like that as well. But tell us what it is that you're doing now, because you clearly are doing some modelling, and you know, and I kind of read that you'd set up a men's fashion business. So tell us what it is that you're doing now, and what that all looks like.
Yeah, so I'm a full-time model, or whatever you want to call it. So I do my modelling. I've got my sort of agents. I've got my main mother agent, they call it, in London. And he looks after me on everything. And I've got model agencies in like every, you know, big city in the world. And they all kind of talk together and pimp you out a little bit and get your job. So I've been doing that now for nearly 11 years, 12 years. And since I'm in the industry and, you know, I like clothes and all the rest of it. So slowly but surely, I've, you know, picked up a lot of, you know, skills and whatever. And I want to make my own clothes. So I sat down with a model friend of mine, a really good friend, Dejan. And we just said, listen, let's just, you know, let's do our own thing. We've got loads of contacts in this industry. We can use them and try and get them for free or for cheap or for a drink. And that was it. So we was going to do it before COVID, actually. But then COVID come. And it sort of, we was like, I feel like I should have still done it because everyone, the sales online went nuts, didn't they? You know what I mean? People were on their sofas buying everything. So we didn't do it. But now we're looking to release 2024 spring, summer. So I'm doing that at the moment. But it's kind of hard to do it because I'm missing a lot of deadlines because I'm flying here and I'm flying there for work. So it's kind of, it's hard. It's more difficult than I thought it would be, finding fabrics and especially trying to do it in England or London. It's really expensive. So we're just finding our feet. We're learning a lot about fabrics and all the rest of it. So yeah, it's gonna be good. I know it's gonna be good. It's just getting there, and I think we will. I'm excited about it.
And when you say Dejan Lovren, yeah?
No. So it's a model friend of mine called Dejan Obradovic.
Okay.
It was like when I first done my first ever like Armani Fashion Wall was like 11 years ago, and I went to obviously to Milan and in Italy, and there's about 50 boy models all looking unbelievable, and I'm like, God, what am I doing here? I don't really belong here. And then all of a sudden I heard a London voice, and I was like, oh, where's he? And that was it.
Right, okay.
So we've been friends ever since, and that was it, so kind of thing. So he looked after me, and now we're good friends, and we're going on this little venture together.
Well, I took a guess because I actually spoke to Dejan a few years ago when he was doing exactly the same. He was setting up a clothing business. So I kind of put two and two together and got fired. But never mind.
I'll have a look at his stuff. I'll have to have a little Google and see what he's got.
Yeah, because I was going to say to you, oh, your clients are Luka Modric and that, but that's the other Dejan. But there you go.
Yeah.
You never know. You could sell some to Steve Sidwell and Dave Kitson, maybe.
Well, they're going to wear it for free for me, then, boys. When they're on their TV,
that's the way to do it, isn't it?
I don't know. I just ain't asked them yet. But when they're on their telly and doing the old sports reviews and whatever.
Yeah. Well, we got a few of the obviously the other ex-Reading contacts as guests. So if you need any help, I'm sure you don't, but we'll help. But look, let's talk about the football. So want to start with before your time at Reading. You started out at Arsenal with Steve Sidwell, Graham Stack, who you mentioned. You're a part, for people who don't know, you're a part of Arsenal's FA Youth Cup winning team in 2000. And actually, the three of you all went out to Belgium together, played on loan out there, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
And you played for Arsenal in the League Cup. And then you were at Stoke, and then you came to Reading. We did a quiz, Johnny, didn't we? And John was one of the answers in the quiz because we said, can you name everyone that scored in the 106 season? So you're on.
I was there, John. Was it 3-1, wasn't it, against
3-1. Yeah, Stoke City. Yeah,
there you go. I saw you score for Reading. There you go.
Everyone scores against their old club, didn't they? What happens?
And you, and John, you played in the Premier League for Reading, and you scored. I think I'm right in saying you scored for Reading against Liverpool in the League Cup. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to ask you about that time, because obviously you were basically at Reading during the two most successful seasons in the club's history.
Yeah.
What was that like, you know, having been at Arsenal and you knew Steve Sidwell, you knew Graham Stack? How did that move to Reading come about, first of all?
You know what? It was a load of different things why I ended up at Reading. First of all, when I was at Stoke, I was having a great time. I wasn't planning on leaving. You know, I was doing really well. I was getting a lot of, you know, plaudits or whatever, and I was happy to stay there and see how we would go on. But then Tony Pulis got sacked, and Pulis was my man. Like, I love Pulis to bits. He, you know, he let me come on and sort of it brought my game on a bit, made me a bit more defensive than I probably would have been because he played me right back. But he's also let me, you know, Tony Pulis is a really, you know, defensive-minded guy, but he still let me do what I wanted to do. He let me get away with murder, but I done well for him. And he's like, as long as you do it like that, you're good to go. So Tony Pulis got sacked, and then they brought another guy in, a Dutch guy. And to be fair, I loved him as well. He was good as gold. But then my contract was coming to a renewal. And whilst they was renewing it, I don't want to sound like a greedy bastard, but we went in there saying we want to, you know, we want to be the highest paid player at the club, blah, blah, blah. And they was like, yep, yeah, cool, we'll do that, no problems. But then they threw a clause in it, a big clause, like for a release clause. So we was like, we don't really want that. And then it went back and forth for ages. And whilst this was happening, I'm going to say it anyway, Parge called me up when he was at West Ham. And Parge said, listen, meet me in the hotel, la, la, la. We'll live in chit-chat. And we'll get you to West Ham when your contract finishes. So I was like, all right, cool. Weren't signing my contract. I'm going to West Ham. So now I'm thinking that. And then the Dutch manager at Stoke, I forget his name. He was a blinder, but he was a big geezer. And what they said to me is, if you don't sign your contract, you ain't playing. So they stuck me on the bench for a couple of months. But I stayed strong. But every time I went into training in the morning, I used to try and find a back way in because he'd be sitting waiting at the front. And he'd go, he used to call me Cat Weasel. Do you remember Cat Weasel?
Yeah.
I had long hair back then. I had long hair, blonde hair. So he used to call me Cat Weasel. And he used to give me a clump. He used to give me an headlock. I'd be like, Gaffer, no. Every morning he'd like, sign your contract. And in the end, I stayed strong. Well, I didn't stay, you know, I didn't sign my contract. And then it got to January and all of a sudden Parge went quiet. West Ham went quiet. So I was like, oh, God. And then I had three or four options of like clubs that were probably looking like they were going to go to the Prem. But then Reading came in. And obviously I was like, Stacks is there, City's there, Harps there, my friends, and back down to London. It sounded great to me. So in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have joined a team where you're right back, he's the captain, he's doing amazing, you ain't losing a game, you're playing amazing. In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have went to a team like that, but I did, and I was told I had to be patient for the first, you know, till the end of the season, which I was kind of, but then once I was in, I was not playing. It was quite disheartening. It's hard to be around when you're a footballer and not playing. It's really difficult. And I found that really difficult. And, you know, I probably got myself into trouble a few times. And whether Kop liked that or not, or whether he liked me or not, I was a bit too dangerous for Kop. Like when I first went there as a right back, he was going to play me. You know, I come from Arsenal. When Arsenal was like, the last ball you play is in a channel. If you do play a channel ball at Arsenal, you get pulled off. So I grew up playing football. Whereas we went to Reading and he said, listen, your first ball's in the channel, your second ball's to your winger, your last ball's into the midfielder. And if that midfielder loses it, it's my fault. So, you know, I wasn't going to change the way I played. So I was more of a risk player. So I don't really know who signed me or, because if you'd have watched me at Stoke, would have realised what kind of a player I was, you know? So I don't want to talk bad about people saying, you know, it was great and they took a chance on me and it didn't work. And I'd done some silly things whilst I was there that probably didn't help me, you know, drinking and whatever. So it's one of them things. But being in and around it and being involved with a team that won the league that convincingly was amazing, that done well, so well in the first season at the Premiership was great. You know, I loved the boys to bits. I loved all the coaching staff and Cops, but it just wasn't meant to be for me there.
And story about, you talked about them not having sort of seen your style of play. Actually, they didn't even see Marcus Hanneman play at all when they signed him. They went to see him play in a game. He wasn't playing. And they saw the way he kicked the ball in the warm-up, warming up the goalkeeper and signed
that was
him.
Enough.
So, yeah. And then,
but that worked wonders for us, didn't it? I mean, Hanneman is early in the channels. That worked wonders.
And obviously, you mentioned Steve Sidwell. He was, you know, a fantastic player for Reading. But yourself and Graham Stack as well. Graham Stack's really interesting because obviously he didn't really get much of a look in. But he, you know, when we've had sort of players on from that team, they've, you know, every now and again, Graham Stack gets a mention. They say he was a big voice
He's a character. Stacks is a character, mate. You put him in any room in the world, any room with any people, and Stacks will be the loudest one in there. And people will listen to him as well. So Stacks is a big, big character and a lovely, lovely guy.
Yeah. And in that situation for him and you, and you're not getting a look in, how do you stay motivated? Do you go, do you know what? I'm going to prove him wrong. I'm going to force my way in. Or, you know, what do you do to keep your spirits up and, you know,
That's what it is. I think you go sort of week to week and you believe in your ability so much. Well, I did anyway. And I feel like Reading was the beginning of the end for me of in my opinion, which should have been a great career, but it wasn't. And I stayed there too long. Maybe I should have had someone pull me out or whatever and tell me, listen, because I was there for what, 2.5-3 years. And once you're out of sight, you're out of mind. I come out of there and there was only a few clubs interested and I'd had my injuries as well at Reading, which didn't help. I believed in my ability so much and I just thought, right, cool. Like, I'm going to still play the way I'm playing, but cops will see it or they'll see it. They'll realise they need me. And I didn't change the way I played. And you just go week to week and you think, oh, I'm going to get in this weekend or next weekend. And then I did have some long-term injuries there as well. So that never really helped.
Well, we had our co-host has got a similar story to you at Leeds before he came to Reading. He couldn't get in because of Gary Speed and Tony DiRigo playing on the left side. He came to Reading, but obviously you mentioned Graham Murty. What a great player he was.
And, what a pro, what a guy. Lovely human.
And sometimes you just, you know, you never wish for someone to get an injury, but sometimes you just need a bit of luck. And that, and that team actually, you know, you had four players up front, likes of Kevin Doyle, Lita, and Dave Kitson, and it was like one of them was always injured, and then someone else. But you never had that.
You kind of just wanted to be thrown in, and then let express yourself on a pitch. Because sometimes if you're judged in training alone, it's a little bit like, and you know what, reserve team football as well was really difficult to play once you'd been playing for 2 or 3 seasons and you sort of go back to reserve team football. I think you go through the motions. I don't think you were at the time, but when I look back at it, and it just happened with pros and pros and pros over the years all the time, you just go through the motions of reserve team football and slowly but surely you get used to that. And then when you step up again, or even when I stepped out and went to, it was a big shock again to start, you know, getting onto that sort of intensity. Because reserve team football is, you know, it's half intensity, really.
Yeah. Johnny, do you want to come in now?
Yeah, Johnny, like when, you know, at Reading there, you know, for the club, it was, you know, obviously one of our greatest seasons. But at the end of that first season, you know, with the celebrations and that, did it kind of feel kind of a bit hollow for you not having a role?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I say it all the time to my mates and that are football fans. I'm like, they're like, oh, if you're involved in a team that wins something, other than maybe internationally, right? If your country wins something, you're involved, fantastic. If you're involved in a team that wins something, but you play a bit part or you're on the bench the whole time, I'm telling you, if you're not telling me you're the same, you're a liar because you don't enjoy it. You don't. Yeah. You don't. You just feel like you're a bystander and you're not really, you weren't involved in it. You didn't help. I've got my medal still and I don't know where it is, if I'm honest with you. I put it away somewhere. I'm just like, it don't, you know, other than I've got great memories here, but I wasn't involved in that really.
And like when you touched on them, when you had a chance to, you know, to play, did you kind of feel like you knew you're only kind of I think that game I was talking about, literally, I think it put a few of the squad players in, didn't they? When you had a game, did you feel like, I'm not really going to get a run here? It's just I'm filling in.
Yeah, yeah. Then you do have that feeling, especially even if you play, like you said, if you play, but then like they've dropped, you know, taking out five or six of the big boys or what you want to call big boys, you still feel like it's, oh, I call this is a bit of a non-important game. It's a bit of a reserve game. It's a bit of a... whereas if you just go in and one player's come out and you're with the boys still and you're, you know, playing well, it feels a little bit different, like you're getting a chance. But yeah, it's just, it's an hard one. And then I think you just need to get out as soon as possible. But I didn't do that. I stayed there too long. And, you know, I love being around the boys and being around it, but I wish I would have got out sooner.
And that summer between championship win, did you think for your first season in the Premier League, come from Arsenal, I've got a chance here now, because maybe the football's going to be different, style of play possibly?
Yeah, that was it. I don't know how much damage I'd actually done between January and then with the coaching staff or whatever, because, you know, some certain things happened. I'll tell you one story in a minute, but you think you get right, cool, I'll be ready for the summer, and then your pre-season starts, and then all of a sudden you're thinking, right, this is it, I'm going to be involved now. But slowly but surely it sort of goes back to the normal ways, and then you get really disheartened again.
Yeah.
And then I think I got injured quite early on, which lasted a few months, and that was it. Once your team's up and running in the Prem and you started really well, and we started really well, that was it. It was like, oh God, I'm back to being, you know, just on the sidelines again.
Yeah. And does that impact on your mental health when you were playing? You know, that
absolutely.
Injuries.
I think you saw it. You ignore it somehow. You find a way to ignore it. Because if you think about it too much, you know, it kills you. But you find a way of ignoring it. I remember, I'm not sure, my memory's a bit hazy, but I do remember at one stage, whilst I was injured, I didn't even want to go to the games. I didn't want, and they must have knew, because the only reason I would go to the game is if you had to do the rounds before and go and see everyone in the boxes.
Yeah.
But if you hit the crossbar, you weren't doing that. And I could hit the crossbar with my eyes shut when I was back in the day. So I don't play golf. I'm going to play golf when I was injured. I didn't want to watch the games. It hurt too much. Yeah. But in hindsight, I probably thought I was getting away with it. But they probably knew. So that all of a sudden, cops and that was probably thinking, who's this kid? Who is this kid? Do you know what I mean? I remember I think January I joined, and I think we had... it was an international break, maybe. So we went away. We went to Sweden. We went to Sweden or Gothenburg to play a few matches. So we was over there, and we played one game. And after the game, you know, whatever, the guy said, you can have a meal or drink, you know, enjoy yourself, lads. Cool. So I think I played about 10, 15 minutes in that game towards the end. Anyway, we went out boozing, as you do. And I just went a bit stupid. I think I rolled back into the hotel about 6, 7 a.m. And on the sign was, whoever played less than 60 minutes is running at 8:30 or 9 o'clock on the track. On the track, 9 o'clock. So I'm like, hang on a minute, I'm in trouble here. So I remember getting lapped on that track. So cops must be thinking, who is this man? Who is this fella with the sign? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I didn't help myself in certain things. And then once things maybe stick, who knows? And, you know, like I said, the style of play probably didn't suit either.
And did Steve ever have it out with you? Would he get a sort of manager that would say, right, come on.
That was the thing. That's why I love Pulis so much, because Pulis told me exactly what he wanted, how he felt, when he wanted it. He didn't care. I knew exactly what Pulis thought about me. Yeah. With cops, he weren't so much. I went into the office a few times asking, you know, can I? Well, you've got to be patient. It was kind of one of them ones, you know, you can go on loan or you can be patient. And that was kind of it, really, where, you know, Pulis would tell you, John, do this, do that, blah, blah, blah. So you had all the information. Whereas, don't get the information, it's a little bit hard to take, but you still believe in yourself and your ability, so you sort of stick around.
Yeah.
When John, when you look back at your time at Reading specifically, do you kind of think to yourself, some of the sort of things you've talked about there, do you think I should have done it differently, or is it kind of one of those things at the time where you think about it later? Do you know what I mean?
I think you think about it later. I did believe in myself so much. I'll tell you one thing. I always think of this, sticks in my head as well. Like, I should have left, in hindsight, as an adult now, after my first training session, I should have left, right? Wow. I turned up late, not late, but I got there late because I was signing and doing my medical and that. So we got into the training pitch and they was finishing training with a five-a-side or whatever. And so I joined in and it was like winning goal or something. So without dropping names, I'd done a trick that set up the final goal that Thierry Henry taught me, right? We won the game. Everyone's buzzing, jumped about. I got pulled to the side after and says, don't ever do that in a game. Don't ever do that in a game. And I'm like, hang on a minute. What am I here for? Like, why have I been signed here? If you don't, that's not, that was me. That was, if you'd watched me, that's what I sort of was. So in hindsight, like, adult John is now like, you should just, once you heard that, mate, you should have packed your bags and found another club or found your way out.
Well, you it does seem bizarre then why they signed you. Sorry, Mark.
No, go on.
I don't know.
As I say, it seemed bizarre why they would sign you then, if that's the type of player. If they'd done the scouting, which Reading at that time, Mark, wasn't it? They were relentlessly good for the scouting in there.
Yeah.
And you're that kind of player. You're not going to do something different than what they've already seen, is it?
Oh, I was a bit of a... I don't know, I'm not saying flair player, but was a bit more of a risky player, or but more of a defender who would like to play out and try and, you know, maybe dribble the ball out a bit or play some interesting things. And they weren't looking for that. So I really don't know who signed me or why I was signed, but I should have, my agent should have, or whatever, should have got out earlier.
Johnny,
I don't want to talk bad about. Like, I love them guys. What they've done was unbelievable. The way he played Cops was what they've done was fantastic. You know, Cops got what position was we in the Premiership in the first season? Was 10th. I mean, unbelievable, right? So, you know, he can tell me that I'm wrong, and I'm saying, "Oh, you might be," but you know,
we'll get you both on it.
Cops wins this.
Johnny, I'm listening to John talk. And I don't know if you're thinking the same, but I wonder how Dylan Kerr would have fitted into that team. It sounds like these two would have been mates, I reckon.
Yeah, definitely. Good combination.
Do I know him now?
Yeah, so put it this way. If you ever meet him, you'll know him. That's for sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So nobody forgets him once you've met him. But
Utopia in Reading. That's his claim to fame.
Yeah. He was well known in there as well. But you obviously did move on from Reading and actually you played for Brentford in League Two, and you were part of their title season. Did you kind of was that like in a way a bit of redemption? Did you think, oh, you know, it's at least I've been part of something now, or did you still have some regrets at that point?
Yeah, no, I think after leaving Reading, I think, you know, look at it now, I probably lost a lot of love for the game. And then going down to Brentford, I only went to Brentford to keep fit because it was next to my house, to keep training, to keep fit, because it looked like I was going to Chef U, and they put a bid in, or not a bid, but they offered a contract. And then I think last second, it went wrong and they signed someone else in the end. And it was like panic stations because the season was starting. So I went to Brentford and to keep fit and train. And then the guys, they were like, "John, please, like, sign for us. I was like, "All right, cool. Let me just do a season here to get back playing." And when I'd done the season there, I mean, it was great. To win the league again, it was fantastic. But it was the same sort of thing. Like, I wanted to play football. That league was a little bit, you know, we just wanted to, you know, be safe and, you know, win the league and play a bit safe. And it probably wasn't for me either. I mean, I had a great time. I played some, you know, some decent stuff there. But after, you know, I was kind of lost the love for football then.
Well, my assessment is it got even worse after that because you played for Aldershot and Wickham. But there you go. No story.
That'd be a game over then.
That's the ones that get out, isn't it?
You know, when you look back on your career, including Arsenal and Reading, you know, what was the high point for you, and what was the low point, do you think, John?
I mean, my high points were all up until I signed for Reading, really. As much as, you know, great memories, but my high points were, you know, Arsenal, FA Youth Cup, playing at Stoke. You know, I had two and a half amazing seasons at Stoke. I actually loved playing there. Absolutely loved it. And then, when you make a move, you've got to be lucky. When you get to a new team or new management and whatever, you've got to be lucky. Or if you're not, get yourself out of there. And I didn't. So, yeah, other than that, I mean, growing up, our youth team was unbelievable. I will never, ever forget them days, or training with the first team and people like Thierry and Keown and Ray Parler and Pires and Vieira. Like, you know, unbelievable.
Yeah.
What was Arsene Wenger like for you? Did you have much involvement with him on the day-to-day when you...
Yeah, Wenger was... he had that thing where he would, you know, he that authority or that aura about him where, you know, he spoke and everyone listened, except for Wiltord a couple of times. but he had that aura. But he'd just walk around, he had that aura and everyone was on it. And he was quite laid back and chilled as well. I loved him. I had a lot of interactions with Wenger. He really liked me at one stage. And then, I mean, I still had like a year or two left of my contract. So in hindsight, I still think, well, I should have stayed and hung about a bit and tried. But breaking into that team is going to be like near on impossible.
You've had John in your career. You've had a little bit of experience, shall we say, of looking on at the teams achieving great things, haven't you? Obviously, that side at Arsenal then, and and then you think you go to Reading and kind of different scenario, of course, but you're watching on there as well. Can you sort of, looking back, did you kind of take anything from your football career from that experience, including, you know, the lows as you saw it, you know, into what you did after football at all? Or did you just think, like, I'm going to put all this behind me, do something completely different now?
You know what? I was super lucky, really. I think what I've learned from football has really helped in this industry. You know, everything I've learned from football, discipline and, you know, big groups and talking, people and travel and everything, it's helped a lot in this industry. But, I was quite lucky. I had a bad injury at Wickham. I'd done my Achilles and I was out for the whole season. It looked like I was, you know, the doctor was saying, listen, it's not looking good. You might as well retire. I think I had about 6 months left in my contract. And my sister was like, listen, let's go to all the modern agencies in London. And I was like, no, leave me alone. So she forced me. She took me to all these modern agencies in London. And they all said, no. And then the last one I went into was Next London, who's now my agent. And it was like, yeah, cool. You look all right. But come back when you can be full time. So I was like, all right, cool. So I forgot all about it. And then eventually retired about 6 months later. And then I think I had 4 or 5 days where I was like, crying my eyes out, what am I going to do? And then I went to Westfield Shopping Centre and I was walking about there and my agent was in there scouting. And he was like, John, what's happening? Like, are you going to come in and take some pictures? So I said, yeah, all right, cool. So I went and took some pictures and that was it. They signed me the next day. So I was signed up the next day and the first few months was quite slow. And then they sent me to New York. I went to New York and some geezer gave me a cover of a magazine and that was it. Like, once that cover came out, it was like, it was just nuts. I didn't stop working. So I was everywhere. It was cool.
Sounds like such a terrible life that you've had, John.
Yeah,
lucky bastard.
It's worked out all right, isn't it? From leaving Reading to
lucky bastard. My third career is going to be a bad one, surely.
So what's next? What's next for you, John? Then what is it? Is it a line of clothing that you want to do? What's the plan?
Yeah, so we're going to start sort of. Well, I'm starting kind of hard, really, but I'm starting small. The selection's going to be quite small, but it's going to consist of I'm doing like what you would call affordable luxury, maybe for men, like modern suiting, really soft suiting, really casual suiting. And we're creating outfits. So we're going to create 5 or 6 outfits and that can all be kind of like, you know, mixed and matched. There's something that you want to keep in your wardrobe for a long time rather than this fast fashion look. So that's the plan. So that once mixing the, even though it's the same industry, mixing the two at the moment is really difficult time wise. So I'm just trying to make it all work. And then next spring when we release it, we'll just play it by ear. Hopefully we can get out there and I can try and get some of the huge footballers to wear it on the telly and whatnot, and all my model friends to wear it. And then we'll see where it goes from there, man.
Well,
we can wear it for you,
Johnny,
on the podcast.
Johnny, I'll let you come in a sec. I'll let you come in a sec, Johnny. But I just want to say, John, I'm getting married, so I might come and have a word, see if you can help me out with some outfit.
And
as I say, 6'7", bald, middle-aged man. If anyone needs someone like that to help out, I don't mind. Like I said, £10 an hour, just let me know. But I know Johnny might come in.
I'll just say, like, if you want to sponsor us on the podcast, you know, we'll wear whatever we want for you, John. You know,
yeah, we'll do that. Dylan,
you might
put it
standing
up. Just the top half. But seriously, John, do you still follow football now?
I love it. I went through a stage of like a year or two of not watching it. I couldn't watch it like after I retired. Even though I must have went through some sort of like weird depression or whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
Like, because I couldn't watch it and I was still working and traveling everywhere, but I went for a little stage of like, because it was quite a big jump from this football industry into this, because with the football you're 30 geezers every day, your best friends every day, amazing, you know, the banter's flying everywhere, and then this is quite lonely, so there's a lot of traveling on your own, you're in the airports, you're on the trains, you turn up, you meet people, new people, maybe 15 of them. You get the shoot done and then you're finished again, like 5, 6 o'clock, you're done. You're in a hotel or you're waiting for your plane the next day. So it's quite a lonely life. It took a while to get used to that. But now I love it, like absolutely love it. And yeah, really, really lucky to be doing it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Dude, who who is your team you follow now, going back to the, is it Arsenal?
So Arsenal, yeah. So I mean, I will watch football, you know, every night the football's on the telly, I can watch it. I mean, I still enjoy a little bet now and again, so that helps. But Arsenal's still my team. We've done all right this season. Just fell at the last hurdle. So hopefully we can have a good summer in the, maybe in the transfer market, and drive on again. Football fan again, absolutely.
And what do you, I don't know if, you know, with what's happened with Reading this season, what do you make of our decline after that great time when you were there? You know, it's
really sad, you know, coming out of league. I don't know what sort of funds they got there, but to get back, come back up straight away is really difficult, you know, really, really difficult. So hopefully you guys can do it. Maybe you need a few more players or you need to invest or whatever money you've got. But, you know, it's a sad time for Reading, but I'm sure they'll bounce back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for that. Yeah, thanks for that, John. Really, you know, really appreciate you sparing your time. From where are you in the world at the moment, by the way?
I'm just in London. I'm in London for the next 3 or 4 days, and I'm off to New York, so I can't. Okay. Can't mind.
Right. That's sounds like it's worked out all right, John.
Yeah.
So far, right,
John. Well, thanks ever so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time, and best of luck with everything you do.
Thank you so much.
Best of luck,
John. Cheers,
chaps. And just a reminder for the listeners and the YouTube viewers that on Tuesday, thanks to Johnny's efforts, we've got former Reading winger Glenn Little. John, I'm sure you remember him.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
It'll go on for a while.
And we've got a bonus episode coming up. We don't know when, but we will be bringing you a bonus episode when Reading finally announce their new manager. So we don't know when that'll be, but Johnny and I are ready to pounce with an episode with our reaction to that. And we have no idea, because there's a new favourite every day at the moment. So we have no idea who it's going to be, really. But thanks, John. Thanks, Johnny. And best of luck with everything, John.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much. Sports Social Podcast Network.